Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Margaret Paul, and I'm happy to be with you this evening talking about relationships, codependency in relationships, taking and caretaking in relationships, which I think is a fairly big subject. Just to let all of you know, I've been up a couple of nights because I've been helping my daughter who just gave birth to my grandson, and so I am a little bit tired, but I'm sure it will be fine. But I just wanted to let you know because my voice is a little bit gravelly from being up so much. So I'm going to talk about taking and caretaking, which are both forms of control in relationships. Taking means that you're handing to another person the responsibility of your feelings and your well-being. You're basically saying to the other person, you're responsible for making me feel safe and secure and happy, and when I don't feel that way, it's your fault. And people who believe that believe that they have the right to make these demands and to get angry or withdraw or in some way punish the other person if the other person isn't making them feel happy and safe and secure. So that's one end of the codependent system. And the other end is the caretaker. So the caretaker is also trying to control. And what the caretaker says is, I am responsible for the other person's feelings. I am responsible for their happiness and well-being. And so when they are unhappy or upset or angry, it's my fault because I didn't do it right. And what caretakers do is they take their own feelings and their own needs and they kind of put them in a closet. And they say, well, I can handle it. I'm strong. And if I really take care of this person well and I love this person well, then that person will eventually do the same thing for me. That person will start to care about my feelings and my needs and I'll get what I want. And so on the inner level, both people in this system are making the other person responsible for their happiness and their sense of security, their sense of safety and well-being. It's just that the taker is doing it more overtly and the caretaker is doing it more covertly. And but they're both abdicating responsibility for their own feelings and their own needs and their own sense of safety and sense of worth and sense of well-being. And when the caretaker is giving themselves up and handing and taking care of the other person and hiding their own feelings and needs away, they eventually get upset. They feel tapped out. They feel used. They feel taken advantage of. Look at all I've done for you. And how come you don't care about my feelings and needs? But the fact is that other people don't generally care about our feelings and needs when we don't care about them. So if you're a caretaker and you've been you've been putting aside your own needs and taking care of somebody else, it is unrealistic of you to expect that that person is going to care more about your needs than you do. Basically, other people mirror for us how we're treating ourselves. And so as a caretaker, if you're treating yourself badly, if you're not caring about your own feelings and needs, then why would you expect somebody else to do that? And having been a caretaker myself for many, many years, it was a shock for me to realize that caretaking is not any more loving than taking. It may look more loving because you're not being demanding. You're usually not that angry. You're being, basically a martyr, giving yourself up, caring about everybody. And so it looks more loving. And it was a real shock to me to discover that caretaking is just as controlling as taking. It's just more subtle. Both of these are coming from the wounded part of ourselves, the part of ourselves that desperately wants to be loved and really believes that that love has to come from another person. And so both takers and caretakers don't believe that they can bring the love into themselves, that they can open to a higher source of love, a spiritual source of love, and bring that love into themselves. They both believe that they have to get love through another person. It's just that the takers do it more overtly, and the caretakers do it more in the less obvious way than the takers. So basically, caretaking is giving oneself up to get love. And as I said, it just never works, because the caretaker ends up feeling used and angry. The taker ends up feeling just as unloved. Both people are not getting what they want. It's a relationship system that doesn't work. The bottom line is that both people are coming from deep self-abandonment. Neither one of these people are taking responsibility for their own feelings and their own needs. They're expecting the other person to do it for them. Now, also, both of these people are coming from a deep fear of rejection. They feel insecure because they're not taking care of themselves. They're rejecting themselves by making the other person responsible, by not dealing with their own feelings. And so because they're rejecting themselves, they end up fearing rejection from the other person. And out of that fear of rejection, they're trying to control each other with their anger, their blame. They're giving themselves up. They're withdrawing various forms of punishment, various forms of being a martyr. And that's their protection against dealing with the fear of rejection, which is really coming from rejecting themselves, from their own self-abandonment. And self-abandonment is when we are not tuning into our own feelings, when we're ignoring our feelings, when we're judging ourselves, when we're acting out addictively to avoid feeling our feelings, when we're making other people responsible, which both taking and caretaking are doing. Those are the inner child will automatically feel abandoned by the adult when we are rejecting ourselves, abandoning ourselves in these ways. And so it's kind of a vicious circle, in that we're abandoning ourselves, we feel unlovable. That moves us into a deep fear of rejection. Out of that fear of rejection, we're trying to get love from the other person, either demanding it overtly or giving ourselves up to get it. And because neither of these things work well, we end up feeling even more insecure, and it becomes a vicious circle. And this is where many, many relationships are, which is why many, many relationships don't work. They'll never work from that system of taking and caretaking. They can't. It may seem like they work for a while, but eventually the caretaker starts to feel angry. At the beginning, when one person is caretaking and the other is taking, it looks like it's working, because the taker is sort of getting what they want. The caretaker thinks they're being loving and thinks there's going to be a payoff at the end. And so for a while, it may seem to work. But eventually, neither person are actually getting what they need. And so at some point, it breaks down. So what's the way out of this? Well, this is what the inner bonding process is about. The inner bonding process is about developing a loving adult part of you who's not rejecting you, which means that this loving adult is listening to your feelings, taking responsibility for what you're thinking and doing that's causing them, not opting out with addictions to not feel your feelings, not going into self-judgment all the time to control your feelings, not making other people responsible for your feelings. But this loving adult actually wants responsibility for our own feelings. This is who the loving adult is. It's the part of us that's connected to a higher source of love and wants responsibility for nurturing our feelings, for causing our pain, for learning about it. And the loving adult learns not to take rejection personally, learns to handle rejection Because the loving adult knows that if somebody is rejecting you, it has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with your worth or lovability. It's just where that other person is. And so when we develop a loving adult who wants responsibility for our feelings and doesn't take rejection personally, that's when we can move out of this codependent system and into a loving relationship system. The loving adult is the part of us that is willing to lose the other person rather than lose oneself. Because whether you're a taker or a caretaker, there is a loss of self. You're either giving yourself to their person or you're setting yourself aside, but in either case, there's a loss of self. And so the loving adult says, well, losing myself is not acceptable. If I don't have me, I don't have anything. And I will take the risk of losing other people or losing another person rather than lose myself. And that's one of the basic things that needs to happen for a person to start to take loving care of themselves, is to be willing to lose others rather than lose themselves. It doesn't mean that you will lose others. But if you're not willing to lose others, then you're right back to trying to control them with your taking or your caretaking, and you're perpetuating the system. So the loving adult is the part of us that is willing to set appropriate limits against being used, against giving ourselves up, against acting out, and who really tunes into what is loving to ourselves, so that we're not reactive to the other person's attempts to control us. When we're really tuned into what's loving to ourselves, we learn to take care of ourselves rather than just react with our anger, our blame, our compliance, our withdrawal, the various ways that the wounded self tries to control in relationships. And so with the loving adult, when fears come up, rather than being reactive and doing all of these protective maneuvers, getting angry or caretaking or withdrawing, the loving adult says, I actually want responsibility for my feelings. And the loving adult learns to do an inner bonding process to discover what you're doing that may be causing some pain, what the loving action is, and moves into taking care of themselves. So, as long as your eyes are on the other person rather than on yourself, you're going to be in this codependent system. The only thing that we actually have control over is ourselves, what we're going to do for ourselves. We don't have control over what the other person is going to do. And so by having our eyes on the other person, we just drain our own energy. We stay stuck in this loop. And so I want to suggest that each of you who's listening now think about taking your eyes off other people or another person and just putting them on yourself. Because each of you, if you're in a relationship, each of you are contributing equally to the dysfunction of the relationship if you're having problems. And so rather than focusing on what the other person is doing, which you can't do anything about, why not focus on what you can do something about, which is you? When one person in a relationship actually owns his or her own end of the system, owns their taking, owns their caretaking, owns their manipulations, all the ways they try and control, and start to take responsibility for their own feelings instead of making the other person responsible, that one person can change the entire system. It doesn't take two people. It takes one person. One person not participating in a codependent system, not moving into taking or caretaking, can change the entire system. Now, obviously, none of this happens easily. It takes practice. It's not an instant process. Inner bonding is not at all an instant process. It's like exercise is not an instant process. You don't go to a gym workout and suddenly you're all buffed out. You do it, you know, day after day, week after week, month after month, and eventually you get in shape. And if you stop doing it, then you lose that. Well, inner bonding is like that. It's something you do day after day, moment after moment. The more you do it, the better you get at it. But if you stop, you're going to go right back. It's like imagining that you have a little child, a little baby inside of you. And we all know that you have to take care of a baby. And if you stop taking care of that baby is going to scream and cry and be in very bad shape. And so inner bonding is about learning to take care of that little child inside of us, which is our feeling self. It's a very, very powerful process, but you have to do it. You can't think about it. You can't read about it only. I mean, certainly thinking and reading about it is important, but if you don't do it, then like exercise, if you don't do it, it doesn't get anywhere. And one of the ways that people get supported in learning and doing the inner bonding process is by being a member on our website. And for those of you that are not members, I really want to encourage you to take our free course and take our free 7 days, because on the membership site, you will find the site to be extremely supportive. You get an enormous amount. It's actually the best deal on the web is to be a member. And I want to encourage you, if you're thinking about it, do it now. Because next week, right now it's $9.95 a month. And for those who join now, it will stay $9.95 a month. But next week it's going to go up to $14.95 a month, because we're going to be installing some new things on the site that I think that you're going to really enjoy, those of you that are members, like a monthly podcast, which you're going to get for free as members. So if you're thinking about joining, now's a good time to do it at $9.95, because it's going to go up. And when you're a member, you get to ask me questions anytime you want on the site, and Erica, we answer them generally within hours of you asking. We're very present on the site. Both of us just love the website, and we love the community, and we're on all the time answering questions, responding to comments, looking at people's comments on the articles, on the discussion boards. We're extremely present there to help you in many, many ways, to support you in your own inner bonding process. And I have found that many of the people who are members are making a lot of progress just by being on the site and getting the support. We have hosted chats, and we have regular chats where people can go on. They go on, they talk to each other at any time of the day. We have very active discussion boards where members share their personal information and receive a lot of help. We have a number of facilitators. It's actually gone up now. We have 5 facilitators who are facilitators in training, and they're working for free. But you have to be a member of the website to take advantage of the free facilitation, and you have to not be able to afford the minimum that any of the facilitators are charging, which is $35 a session. So for those of you who want inner bonding facilitation and help, and you can't afford anything, we have 5 facilitators that are available to work with you and help you to move forward with your inner bonding process. And on the membership site, I write 2 articles a week, one for the public site, one just for the member site, and those are often in more depth. And Erica writes a blog, which is funny and inspiring and helps people feel part of the community and often stirs a lot of discussion in the comments. And in addition, members can submit their own articles, their creative writing, their poems, art, photography, recipes, movie reviews, book reviews. It's a whole community. So for those of you that are not yet members, please do look into becoming members. We have videos of people doing the inner bonding process to help you further understand the process. When you join a community of people who care about each other and help each other to really stay focused with the inner bonding process. So if you're interested in healing and personal and spiritual growth and creating loving relationships, here's where you will receive the help you need. There's just no other website like it on the internet where you get this kind of loving support. So I really want to encourage those of you who are not members to join. And I'm going to take some of the questions that people put online, and then I'm going to unmute and let some of you ask questions. So one of the questions is, how do you know when you're taking versus receiving? And that's a really good question. When you're taking, you're in your wounded self, which means that you're not feeling safe inside. You're not feeling secure. You're not feeling a deep sense of worth. And you're hoping that somebody else's love is going to give you that sense of safety and that sense of worth. And in other words, it's like if we have a piece of cake and we have the icing. When somebody is taking responsibility for themselves, they're creating the cake. When they're receiving from another person, the receiving is the icing on the cake. And it's wonderful to have the icing, but it's not the cake. And so when you're not loving yourself, then you're hoping somebody else is going to give you the cake that will make you feel safe and secure. And that's what taking is. So taking is when you're in your wounded self, when you're in your loving adult and you're taking responsibility for yourself. Then when other people are giving to you, you're receiving what they're giving lovingly, but they're not responsible for your sense of well-being. You're already feeling happy and safe and secure, and what they're giving you is the icing on the cake. So here's another question. How do you know when someone's taking? Always asking you to do for them what they should be doing for themselves is caretaking on your part. How do you set the appropriate boundary in order to discourage this type of interaction? So if someone is always asking you to do for them what they should be doing for themselves and you do it, then you're caretaking. The person who's asking is doing the taking. If they're trying to get you to take care of things that they actually can take care of themselves, then they're taking. Now, this person is saying, how do you set an appropriate boundary in order to discourage this type of interaction? Let's talk for a moment about what a boundary is. A boundary is not something that you set for the other person. That's just control. You can't make another person change their behavior or be different. You can't stop them from being a taker. In other words, you can't say, don't do that, because you have no power to make them not do that. So an appropriate boundary is what you do. It's about what you have control over. So an appropriate boundary in this case might be to say, you know, I'm no longer available to do for you what you need to be doing for yourself, and then you don't do it. And if you don't do it enough times, then that person might stop asking because you're no longer caretaking. As long as you're caretaking, why shouldn't they keep on taking? Why shouldn't they keep on demanding? They're not going to change that behavior as long as you're caretaking. So instead of focusing on them and discouraging them, focus on yourself. What kind of limit do you need to set? What do you need to say about what you're going to do? Not about what you want them to do, but on what you're going to do. So I'm going to unmute and see if anybody has some questions, and I can do a little work with somebody on the site. So hold on 1 second here. Okay, anybody would like to ask a question here?
I have a question.
Okay, and what's your name?
Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
Okay, what's your question?
Okay, I'm not sure exactly how to phrase the question, but sometimes people, I think, need some sort of nurturing, or they need some sort of model of what it's like to be loved.
Right.
Be loving if they haven't received it. Do
yes.
that for them, or if you receive it from somebody else, is that considered taking or caretaking if it's the other way around?
Not necessarily. It really depends upon the person's intention. In other words, if somebody has not received love and they need that nurturing in order to learn how to do it for themselves, and you give them that nurturing to help them understand what it feels like and you role model it, that's not caretaking, that's caring. But if they're coming from a place where, you know what, I'm going to mute again because there's too much noise, and I'll continue answering the question.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody really wants you to just take responsibility for them, to do the loving for them, then that's caretaking. But if they're needing the help, if they really want to learn to do it for themselves, they just don't know how, they're needing some role modeling, they're needing some nurturing, they're needing some healing, that's caring. There's a huge difference between caring and caretaking. We're caring about others when we have no agenda. We're giving to them for the pure joy of giving, even if it's something they can do for themselves, like, say, cook dinner or something. We're doing it because we want to. We have no agenda attached to it. It just gives us joy to do it. So that's caring. That's not caretaking. Caretaking always has an agenda attached. In other words, I'm going to give to this person so they'll give back to me. But certainly if somebody needs a lot of healing and they really truly want to learn to be a loving adult, and we do this a lot at our intensives. People come, they really want to learn, but there's a lot of trauma in the past, there's a lot of unhealed, wounded stuff going on. They may need a lot of nurturing. They may need to be held. They may need to feel what it's like to feel loved before they have any idea how to do that for themselves. That's caring. It's not caretaking. But if they're pulling on somebody to do it for them and they have no intention of ever doing it for themselves, then when you do it, it's caretaking. So I'm going to unmute again.
Thank you.
So does that answer your question, honey?
It
Stephanie?
Does. Yeah, thanks. But I guess
what?
You have to know your intention. But
yes,
how
you
about
have to know
somebody else's? How would you know somebody else's intention and what they need? And my other question, I guess, in response to that is, what if somebody has had experience with it or knows how to do it, but they're going through a crisis and maybe just needs a little
yes,
bit more
I mean,
time?
Yes, sometimes people do need our support if they're going through a crisis or they're sick or, you know, something like that, and they need extra help. Yes, that's definitely caring to be there for them. But how do you know? Actually,
yeah.
if you're tuned into your own feelings, there's a huge difference inside in how you feel between somebody who's truly needing help and somebody who's pulling on you to do it for them. When somebody is pulling on you to do it for them, it feels awful inside. You feel like you want to back away. It feels like they're trying to control and consume you, and it just doesn't feel good inside. But when somebody genuinely needs the help, then your heart is moved by them. You feel like you want to go and help them. You feel like you want to hold them, embrace them, make something easier for them. It's a completely different feeling inside. So this is about learning to trust your own inner experience. Very often, like let's say I'm at an intensive and I'm working with somebody and somebody is in tears. You know what? I'm going to mute again here. Oh, excuse me, I'm going to mute. So let's say that I'm at an intensive and somebody is sitting in front of me and they're crying. And my heart is just moved by them. I can feel tears coming up in my eyes. I just want to go and embrace them and help them in any way I can. I know that that person is genuinely in pain. They want to learn. They want help. They're not using their unhappiness or their misery to pull on anybody else. But if I'm sitting with somebody and they're crying, but they're in a victim state. It's like, poor me. This always happens to me. You know, somebody come along and rescue me. My heart does not get moved by that, and neither does anybody else's. I'll look around the room, and nobody is moved. Whereas with the first person, you know, there's tears running down people's cheeks. They're so moved. And so you have to tune inside to your own feelings, because if you're not moved by that person, you know that they're in a victim state and they just want you to caretake them. They have no intention of learning, of taking any responsibility for themselves. So I'm going to unmute now. So, Stephanie, do you understand that?
I do. What about if you just don't know what to do? Like somebody I was talking with last week, she's young, she's like 18, and her father is dying. And her father's in Florida, and she's at Princeton and all this stuff. And she started crying, but I just felt frozen. And I don't know if that's because I just don't have enough experience with being loved in that situation to know what to do.
Yes,
I didn't want to run away.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yes, that you don't have the experience of bringing in your own spiritual guidance, and that's what happens when you practice inner bonding long enough. You can bring in your own spiritual guidance and know exactly what to do. You don't have to know. You're not going to ever know it from your mind. It has to come through you. And so one of the advantages of practicing inner bonding is that you have that access to your spiritual guidance, and you can know what to do in a situation like that. You don't even have to think about it. So is there somebody else who would like to ask a question?
Hi, Dr. Paul. This is Joanna.
Yes, go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, hi. I had a question about boundaries, and it seems like if you know what to do and you know the right things to do and you find yourself overstepping your boundaries over and over and over again and you get...
What does that mean, overstepping your boundaries to you? What does that mean to you?
It means... I'll give an example. Like, say I'm in a, I go in a restaurant and I, there's somebody I know, and just instead of keeping it just casual and light and just a short conversation, I get very involved you get very involved in the conversation, and you're spilling your intimate details, private details. And you end up feeling like you just gave yourself...
Okay, so I understand what the kind of situation that you're talking about. And so you're saying, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, what do you do when you see it doing the, repeating the same behavior over and over, and afterwards you go, you don't feel good, and yet you just keep repeating it, I'm kind of at a loss.
Okay, so when you find yourself, for example, doing something, I'm just gonna mute again. Hold on. So when you find yourself in that situation, where let's say that you're over talking or over sharing, that can indicate that the child in you is needing a lot of attention, and so you're trying to get the attention from somebody else. And the information is very important. The information is that you're not giving enough attention to your own self. You will automatically be doing that in different situations because the inner child needs attention. And if he or she is not going to get it from you, then you're going to find yourself pulling on others by over-talking and over-sharing. And so when you find yourself repeating that pattern, if you were to go inside and do an inner bonding process, in other words, you were to take that situation and go inside and you're feeling bad from having done that, and you go inside and you ask your little girl, there must be a very good reason that you're doing this. What are you needing from me that you're not getting? What am I doing that's causing you to spill your guts to somebody else? And then you go inside, and that little girl might say, well, you never listened to me. So, you know, of course I'm going to do that with them because they're listening to me. You never listen to my feelings. You never listen to what I want. You never hear me. You're not here for me. And until you decide that I'm important to you, then I'm going to have to try and get it from somebody else. And so through the inner bonding process, you can find out that you're, in fact, abandoning yourself and that this is why you're acting that way. And then in the inner bonding process, you go in step four, you go to your guidance, and you ask your guidance what would be loving to your little girl, and you start to listen. You know, your guidance would say, well, you need to take some time every day. You need to start to tune into your body. You need to be aware of your feelings. You need to care about your feelings. You need to take responsibility for what you're doing to cause your feelings. You need to see that your feelings, which is your inner child, are very important, and stop ignoring them. And then in step five, which is the loving action, you would need to take that action. And then after a while of taking that action, your little girl will start to feel important to you. And when she does, you'll find yourself no longer acting that way. But you're not going to be able to stop it until you're taking responsibility for yourself. So I'm going to unmute now.
Thank you. That helps.
So does that answer your question?
Yes, I never. Yes, I'm taking it in.
Oh, good.
Amazing. Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay, you're very welcome. I think I'm going to take another of the written questions, so I'm going to mute again. Okay. Steve asks, I tend to get involved with people who are selfish and inconsiderate. Things go great in the beginning, but then they become noncommittal and they say they don't know what they want. I'm beginning to see a pattern and it's creepy. Help. Okay, so yes, if you're finding yourself with people who are selfish and inconsiderate and uncommitted, the chances are that you're caretaking and that you're being attracted to takers and that you're trying to have control over them giving you what you want, because you're not giving it to yourself. And if you want to break this pattern, inner bonding is the best process I know for breaking this pattern. It would mean you spending some time learning how to do the process, learning how to give to yourself what it is that you're trying to get from others with your caretaking. And once you are really taking responsibility for your own feelings, you will find yourself no longer attracted to people who are selfish and inconsiderate. We get attracted to people at our common level of woundedness. That is, that the degree to which you are caretaking is the degree to which you are going to attract somebody who's taking, which means they're going to be selfish and inconsiderate. And basically, they're going to treat you, like I said, they're going to treat you the same way you're treating yourself, which is probably being very inconsiderate towards yourself, not taking responsibility for yourself. And so, once again, this will get solved if you practice the inner bonding process. But if you don't practice the process, then there's no healing, and you're going to continue to attract people into your life who are mirroring how you're treating yourself. So let's see. How do I learn to set healthier boundaries for myself so as to not caretake anymore? Well, once again, you're caretaking because of the self-abandonment. So it's not just a matter of setting healthy boundaries. The healthy boundaries are sort of automatic. You're going to automatically set them when your intention is to take loving care of yourself. Now, in the inner bonding process, many of you on the line know this, but some don't. In the inner bonding process, there's only two intentions. One is the intention to control others, and the other is the intention to be loving to yourself. And you can't be in both at the same time. And so when your intention shifts from trying to control others to wanting to be loving to yourself, then you will be loving. You will, you know, naturally set healthier boundaries. You will naturally not be caretaking others because it's not loving to you. And so it requires the shift in intention. So I am going to unmute and see if there's more questions.
Hi, Margaret. This is Kate. I have a question for you.
Okay.
What I've realized as you were talking that I sort of had one of those aha moments, and as you know, my partner's been unemployed for 10 months.
Now, who is this?
This is, you know me, it's Kate from Boston.
Oh, yeah, hi.
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 So there's some truth to, so my aha moment was basically, I realized that I've linked my safety and happiness to whether or not my partner is employed. And there's some real, there is some truth to that because, you know, without a second income, it is very scary. And it, you know, we are working at trying to, you know, regulate our finances. And my inner kids get terribly freaked out when thinking about what happens when unemployment runs out. And I'm trying very hard to stay connected and in faith and take care of myself, but I realized as you were talking that I've been doing a lot of projecting and making it in some ways her fault.
Uh-huh.
But there is real truth to the fact that, you know, it is scary when we're only living on one income, and I'm a non-for-profit worker, so we're struggling in that way.
Right.
So I'm trying to sort out what's, I know that I've had my eyes on her plate, but I'm not.
You know, I think that the main issue here
mm-hmm.
is for both of you to take a look at how you're not manifesting, because this is a frequency issue. And, I mean, this can get a little complicated here because
mm-hmm.
it's my belief that we're living at a time where it's absolutely vital for us to maintain a high frequency.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a time where we're either going to really manifest or we're not. And that it's a time to be very, very vigilant about our thoughts and to be doing all we can to stay connected to
mm-hmm.
ourselves and to our guidance, and to be thinking about what you want, to be thinking about your blessings, what you have, to be thinking about what's loving to you, what's loving to your partner. You're getting stuck in your fear,
yes.
which is understandable.
Okay.
But fear is a low frequency.
Right.
And you cannot manifest from a low frequency. Once you go down into fear, it's like the doors to manifestation close.
Mm-hmm.
And spirit cannot support you. It's like spirit is wanting to bring you what you want, and the door is closed.
Closed, okay.
And so it's a time, even though it's very, very scary,
mm-hmm.
It's a time to think of the most positive things you can, to be thanking God for your health, your well-being, your
yeah.
partner, your families, whatever, to be, you know, thanking God for the new day, to be thinking about what you want rather than what you don't want, to
okay.
be doing everything you can to be vigilant about keeping your frequency high. It's not easy. This is a very difficult economic time for many, many people.
Yeah.
But there are people who are truly manifesting in this time, and that's because they're keeping their frequency high.
Yeah, and I think, as you were saying, I think there's a way in which that I've been avoiding some helplessness, so I think I need to go in and have those feelings.
Uh-huh.
And move through those, and then I think...
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Because if you're blaming her, then you're not accepting your helplessness.
No. Right.
Over her.
Right.
But you're not helpless over you.
Correct, yeah.
And so if you're thinking, if you're blaming her, if you're focused on your helplessness over her, your
mm-hmm.
eyes are in the wrong place.
Wrong place.
Yep.
Yep.
And that's
going to
lower.
Much.
Yeah, that's going to lower your frequency.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Anybody else have a question?
My name is Brady.
Brady.
Uh huh.
Okay, honey. Go ahead.
When you are extremely scared, I just got out of a relationship, and I'm sure other people have too. Had this experience. He was out drinking and driving in an ice storm, and it was we had a mortgage together, and just like that night, all these fears started coming to me because of it would be my responsibility to handle things that I didn't feel I would be capable of handling if he would get in a car accident. Plus, I was worried about him being killed in the, from driving, and I know people who their children drive drunk and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
How do you handle, because you can't set a boundary on what they do.
Right.
Other than, I mean, I ended the relationship, and I didn't want to do that because I cared about him, but it was, I couldn't handle that fear.
Well,
and
yes.
You can't set when you have children. You can't walk out on your children if they're doing something like that.
And so, what are you asking? Are you asking what else do you do other than leave the relationship in a situation like that? Well, there's nothing else. No, there's nothing else you can do. If you're in a relationship with somebody who is that irresponsible as to drive drunk in an ice storm, and you know that that's probably not a one-time thing, and there's nothing you can do to make that person take responsibility, then the responsible thing for you to do is to not be at the other end of that. And it sounds like that you did take the responsibility of leaving the relationship, because that's the only thing that's loving to you.
Okay.
Even
thankfully, I had a way out, but I don't know if it's your child though, because that scared me for like I know a girl that I work with. Her daughters drive drunk, and it terrorizes her, so I don't know how she handles it.
Well, I mean, once again, it's a very, very frightening thing. You know, it's not like you're going to walk away from a child in the same way you walk away from a partner, but in fact, if her child, are you saying that her child is living with her and driving drunk, or living on their own and driving drunk?
No, living with her.
Oh, living with her. See, if the child is still living with her, then the parent does have some leverage. I mean, you know, I don't want to get into a whole parenting thing here, but a parent does have some leverage with a child that is living with them, because they're, you know, basically paying their room and board and all that, and there's some leverage there. But and sometimes a parent may need to take the stance that either, you know, if you don't stop, then you can't stay here. Sometimes that's the only thing a parent can do in a situation like that.
That's not really telling, because you can't control their behavior, but you give them the options. You give them options.
Yeah, you give them options. You can't make them not drink and drive, but you can say that, you know, if you're going to live here, you can't drink and drive. If I find out you're drinking and driving, then you can't live here.
Okay, and that's not controlling?
No, that's taking care. Well, you see, once again, sometimes intention can be very subtle. If you're doing it to control them, then yes, it's controlling. If you're doing it to take loving care of yourself, then it's taking loving care of yourself. If you say to them, well, you can't live here if you drink and drive, but you're really saying it as a threat and you don't mean it, then it's very controlling. But if you're saying it because you know you can't live with that, and that it's not loving for you to live with that, and it's loving to you to not live around that, then no, it's not controlling. It's taking care of yourself.
Okay.
It's taking loving action in your own behalf.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Anybody else have a question? Okay, I'm going to mute and answer some of the other written questions. Hold on. Okay, let's see. This person says, by loving ourselves, taking and caretaking are essential ingredients living a life. May I hear your opinion? Okay, so in a sense, this feels like an oxymoron to me, because taking and caretaking are not loving. They're not essential ingredients living a life. They are manipulations. They are forms of control. Nobody needs to take. We do need to give and receive. And maybe this person is confusing taking and caretaking with giving and receiving, because giving and receiving are definitely, in my opinion, essential to living a joyous life. The act of giving lovingly with no agenda attached fills one's heart. The act of receiving when somebody else is giving lovingly with no agenda is also an act of love that fills one's heart. But that's totally different than taking and caretaking, which are manipulations, which have an agenda. And so I just don't see that taking and caretaking are essential ingredients in life and have anything at all to do with loving ourselves. So let's see what other questions we have here. When does taking and caretaking move into codependency, or is it always? So yes, taking and caretaking is codependency. That is the definition of codependency. Codependency means that you are making the other person responsible for your sense of worth, your happiness, your well-being. And both takers and caretakers are doing exactly that. Neither are taking responsibility for themselves. Both are making the other person responsible. So it is codependency. So let's see. Joanna asks, how can I get over the past and not keep holding grudges against my partner? There are some things I want to get over, but I just can't seem to do it. Every day I wake up thinking about the things he's done to hurt me, and I can't seem to move forward and trust him completely again. It's making it hard to feel and act lovingly towards him. Okay, so whenever we find ourselves holding grudges against a partner, it is because there's some way that we are hurting ourselves. As long as you think that all of your hurt is coming from what your partner has done to you, to hurt you, then you are not looking at your own end of the system and what you're doing to hurt you. And really, that's what you need to be focusing on, is what are you doing to hurt you? How are you ignoring your own feelings? How are you not listening to your intuition? How are you not taking loving care of yourself? How are you in self-judgment? How are you acting out addictively? What are you doing to hurt yourself? And I can guarantee you that if you start to practice inner bonding and you start to take responsibility for your own feelings and for all that you're doing to hurt yourself, that you will stop thinking about whatever it is he's done. Whatever it is he's done is not what's relevant. It's really what you're doing that's relevant. We want to think that it's the other person that's hurting us, but that puts us in a victim state, and we're actually not victims. And but this person is thinking that she's a victim, and holding grudges. Grudges is a way of blaming somebody, making them responsible for you. And so the way to get over it, and you're asking how can I get over it, is to start to practice inner bonding and start to practice taking care of yourself now, in this moment, rather than ruminating on what he's done. What if all the time you spend ruminating on what he's done, you were to spend doing inner bonding work with yourself and learning what it means to take care of yourself? What if you took all that energy that you're spending on him and thinking about him and what he's done to you, and you take it on taking care of yourself? Don't you think that that would really, really change things for you? Why don't you decide to learn to practice the inner bonding process and see what happens? Because I can guarantee you that if you do, you will stop thinking about him. You'll stop thinking about the past. Okay, I'm going to unmute just to see if there's anybody else that has any other questions. Okay, anybody else want to ask a question? Does that mean all your questions are answered? And everything is totally... Yes, go ahead, Annie.
I have a follow-up question, I guess, to what the last woman asked.
Okay.
So how do you Let's see. I'm trying to think. How do you, if you want to stay, if you want to be loving to yourself and pick a loving partner, then how do you know when it's good to be aware of things they're doing that are unhealthy, that are like red flags that you should be aware of and think about, and maybe not put yourself in the same situation to get hurt again versus just keeping your eyes on them? Does that make sense, if you know what I mean?
Yes, yes, I understand what you mean. You see, once again, if you were to be practicing inner bonding, you would be more and more tuned into your own feelings, and you would be more and more tuned into your guidance, and more tuned into truly what is healthy, loving behavior towards yourself and with others. And the more you do this, the quicker you pick up dysfunction in others. Really, it's not very difficult to pick it up once you are practicing inner bonding for a period of time, because you just get so tuned into the energy. And so if you meet somebody and that person is coming from, you know, some narcissism and insecurity and deep need to control, and you have been really learning how to take loving care of yourself, you would be able to pick that up in like, you know, 5 seconds. It would just take no time at all for you to know that. But like I said, we get together at our common level of woundedness, and so the degree to which you're not taking loving care of yourself is the degree to which you're not going to get that in others. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. But if nobody's perfect, so how do you know when you're just being critical and when you're seeing your flaws? And when it's okay to sort of accept people's perfection?
Okay, so one of the major ingredients in a good relationship is that the person is open to learning about their own wounded self. If a person is not interested in being on a learning and healing path, in other words, let's say that you're a person and you're practicing inner bonding, and maybe you've had some therapy and you do some reading and you're really interested in learning to take responsibility for yourself.
Okay.
And you meet somebody who seems like a nice person, but they're completely not interested. You refer them to the website, they're not interested. You know what? I'm gonna mute again because somebody is talking on the phone. Let's see.
Oh, we need to climb on here.
Let's see, now I lost my train of thought. Okay. You're gonna know very quickly if somebody is open to learning or not. Once you are, if you're on a path of learning, if you really want to learn about taking responsibility for yourself, and you're with this person and you try to offer them some information, or let's read this book together, or would you be interested in taking a workshop with me, or something like that. And this person is totally uninterested in any kind of self-learning, self-growth. That's probably not going to be a good relationship, because it does take an openness to learning. So I'm going to unmute. So do you understand what I said about that?
Yeah, I do. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the major things that you want to take a look at, is this person open to learning? People can have all kinds of issues going on, but that doesn't mean they can't resolve them. And many issues are resolved within a relationship when two people are open to learning. But if one or both people are not open to learning about themselves and about healing their wounded selves, then that isn't going to happen, and the relationship is going to sink into the codependency. So I want to thank you all for joining me. This is being recorded, and if you know anybody who would have liked to have heard it and wasn't on, they can go to that same link that you clicked on to get here, and they can hear this recording. So I hope all of you have a wonderful evening. Good night.
Thank you.
Good night. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Good night.
Bye.